literally 10 or 15 minutes, starting off a new series. We're starting a series of about 5 or 6 weeks looking at worship, looking at what actually does it mean to worship? Why do we worship? What should it look like? What does it involve? How do we do it? Where do we go for it? Who's it all about? And we've called the series Because He's Worth It. So cue all those kind of like shampoo advert flicking your hairs. But we really want to look and consider actually, what is this all about? And this morning, I don't want to talk for hours. We're going to get into some of the nuts and bolts of it over the next few weeks. But actually, what I want us to do is to have a little bit of a think about who we worship and what we worship already. You see, when I come to talk about worship, some of you will have some pictures in your heads about what that looks like. And for some people, it will look like this. And for some people, it would look like getting on your knees, which I'm not going to demonstrate because you won't be able to see me. And for some of you, it would look like, you know, gazing and adoringly at something. And it could look like all kinds of different things. But what actually is it that you worship? Because one of the things that I'd want to put out there is that I think all of us worship something. Now, whether we realize that we do or we don't, I think that we all worship something. So there's a couple of pictures here, which now, of course, are very actually difficult to see because we can't see through using the screen. But the first one is a bunch of girls at a One Direction concert. Screaming, maybe that's what worship looks like with their phones out so they don't ever actually look at something apart from through the lens of a phone. You know, the second one is just a bunch of guys. Oh, actually, and some ladies at a football, I was going to say a football concert. It's not a concert, is it? A football match. And that's where we actually do see an awful lot of hands up and singing, even in a football match, don't we? That's an interesting one. But we, you know, people who just, you know, focus their lives around. And this last one, I think you may not see at all. It's a lot of flags waving. It's the last night of the proms, which actually was last night, wasn't it? Yeah, so totally relevant and topical in a way I didn't realise until I saw it on the telly last night. But the truth is, and I had another one actually, I showed Breakfast Church, but appeared to have not put on this slide, of someone just really enjoying their food. And the truth is, there's so many different things that come into our life that we enjoy. And actually, there's one more thing that I wanted to show you. This is a picture of some lyrics from a song. And Robbie Williams, for those of you who don't know, he's a singer. He used to be part of a band called Take That, and he's had a solo career since. And I quite like Robbie Williams. He's a bit of a cheeky chap. But this last song that I've put up here really disturbed me when I first heard it on the radio. It's a whole song to somebody that he clearly cares about. But the lyrics of the song that have been put on somebody's wall here go like this. I love my life. I am wonderful. I am magical. I am me. And it goes on, I am beautiful, I am powerful. And as I listened to the lyrics of this song the first time, it profoundly disturbed me. Because I thought, some of those phrases, if we just replaced a word or two, they'd sound like a song we'd sing in church. If we turned it into, you are wonderful, maybe not you are magical, that's a bit weird. But you know, you are powerful, you are beautiful. They sound an awful lot like some of the songs that we sing here. And yet this is a song about yourself. And I think sometimes, and certainly this song, encourages us to actually turn the focus of worship onto ourselves and to put ourselves at the center of our lives, which in many senses makes sense. And yet actually, what is this all about? Because you might be somebody who sits there and thinks, well, I don't really do worship. I'm not that kind of a person. I don't worship anything, thank you. But I don't think that's possible. You see, I don't think it's about will we worship. I think that actually the real question is, who do we worship? And who is that? Or what is that? What does that look like? If you were to take your life apart and to take stock of who you are and where you go and what you do and what you spend your time on, what you give your resources to financially, your time, your energy, your effort, your studies, what would that reveal about what's going on underneath? What would that show you about what it is that you actually worship? You see, I fundamentally believe that we all worship something. And I equally believe that often we're not aware of it. Often we don't even know what it is that we worship. Often we don't register what's become the center of our lives. For some of us, it's football and it's really clear and we've got a season ticket and we've got to be there every week. And if we're not, we're grumpy. It might even just be that it's match of the day, and if we don't get to watch that, then the whole family has a disaster. It might be to do with music. It might be to do with a hobby or a pastime that we've got. It might be our family. It might be that actually our family is what sits at the center of everything that we do. And you know, these things don't have to be intrinsically bad. They can be things we're meant to focus on, but when they sit at the center and they consume us and they become everything and they take all our time, all our energy, that's when we begin to get those clues and that those pointers towards what it is actually that we worship. And I think it's good sometimes to take a little bit of a stock take about what it is. And you might also be somebody who sits and thinks, well, worship, I appreciate some things, or I appreciate God even maybe, but I don't worship. What's that all about? All this singing, hands in the air. Do I can sing without my hands in the air. I can appreciate the words without even singing. I can sit down, actually. Actually, this God, I know that he's good. I would like to obey his rules. I'd like to be his friend, but worship, it's not really who I am. It's not really. You know, worship is for those people, perhaps, we think, that actually are those creatives, you know, the kind who do beautiful paintings or, you know, get a little bit carried away and passionate when they're talking about things. Those kind, they're not for me. I'm a cerebral person. I am somebody who likes to understand and to get it and to have clear knowledge about everything. So actually this worship is for, we're all just different, aren't we? We're all just different. Worship is for people who feel things. I'm somebody who knows things. I just want to cancel that one out, actually, when it comes to God. Because I think that if you don't worship, you don't get it. I think those two things are intrinsically linked. I don't think you can get it and not worship. Not when it comes to anything, actually, but certainly not when it comes to God. But to explain that, I wanted to show you some things that I don't get, and I definitely don't worship. Okay, so here's three things that I don't get. I don't get art. Okay, I can appreciate art sometimes, a pretty picture. I get that it's clever because I can't do it. But it doesn't move me. It does not stir me. It does not amaze me. Picasso in particular, I just think is weird. Along with a whole load of other modern art, I just don't really get it. Don't worship it. I'm not one of those people who can sit in a gallery and look at a painting and just be, you know, awestruck by it. I definitely don't get that. I don't get it. Doesn't mean it's wrong. I just don't get it. Similarly, hip-hop music. Don't know how many people here do get that. But it's not my thing. I'm not going to spend, hey, head up at the back. Well done. Lone soldier. But it's one of those things I just don't get. So I don't listen to it. I don't buy it. I don't spend time with it. I don't want to go to a concert. I don't want to do anything because I just don't get it. And olives, they're gross. I would rather eat sheep's eyes. Actually, I probably wouldn't rather eat sheep's eyes. But to me, it's not much difference. They're just a bit gross. And yet, there's members of my family that do anything for an olive. They love them. But I don't get them. But you see, intrinsically, we worship what we get. And when we get something, when we get that something is awesome, when we've got that head knowledge, that cerebral thinking, academic understanding, then if we've really got it, then we have to worship, surely. When we really get that something is great, we really, really understand it. And so that brings us to this place with God. You see, we can talk about football matches, and we can talk about music, and we can talk about art, and we can talk about nature, and we can talk about people, and we can really admire all kinds of things. But when it comes to God, I don't think that we can follow him, know him, and not worship. I just don't think it's possible. I can say this because he's not here, my husband's not here, but I have this ongoing debate with my husband about some of the songs that we sing. Now, worship is not just about singing in any shape or form. Worship is all about where we put all of our resources, our time, our energy, our effort, as well as that kind of like spoken out, sung out stuff that goes on as well. But Steve and I have this thing, because he has a bit of a thing about, he'll sing some songs. He likes good old anthem, hymn type songs. He does not like songs which he calls, quote, Jesus is my boyfriend songs. Okay, so he doesn't like songs where he has to declare his love to Jesus, and he particularly doesn't like songs, and he's going to be glad he's not here because we've got a couple coming up, where he has to tell Jesus that he's beautiful. So Steve and I have this conversation ongoing, and I say, but Jesus is beautiful. No. No, that is a Jesus is my boyfriend song, and I can't sing that. And I said, well, that's ridiculous. He said, well, actually, Becca, it's not ridiculous, because in the Bible, and he's correct, it says that Jesus, his appearance wasn't something special. And my response to that is, doofus, that is not what that means. That is not what beauty means. That is not actually, when you get down to it, that's just you being a boy of your generation brought up to think it's all about physical appearance. It's not. So he has this understanding, and we have this ongoing joke that requires me to die first, basically, because I am convinced that when Steve gets to heaven for the first time, and when he looks Jesus in the eye, I believe with everything in me that he will fall to his knees and the first words out of his mouth will be, "You are beautiful." And then God and I can have a laugh. Because Steve will finally get it. Steve will get what it really means. He'll understand that this isn't the same as telling me that I'm beautiful, but it's important he says that as well. But he'll get it. He'll get it. And I have to die first, or else I'm going to miss the moment, and then heaven won't be heaven. That's a whole nother topic. But I need to better laugh at my husband. But bringing it back, if we truly know who Jesus is, if we truly understand him as the Son of God, if we truly get that God is the creator of the universe, you know, that he put the stars in the sky, the leaves on the trees, the fish in the sea, that he put breath in your lungs, that he knows the hairs on your head, that he has known everything before it even began, and that he will be there at the end. When we understand that, it's hard not to worship. It's hard not to worship. Yes, amen. Now, don't get me wrong. My husband is not a heretic, and he does worship. And he's given his whole life to wanting to follow Jesus because of who he knows that Jesus is. And that was just an illustration. But it's good for us to get it. And I'm going to move in a moment into a time of communion. I'll explain that when we get there. But before that, I want to read you a passage from the Bible. It's a passage that we find in a book called Colossians. And it's written by a man called Paul, who was one of the great church early church leaders. And he's spent his life, once he met Jesus, touring around the Mediterranean, telling people about who Jesus was, setting up churches. And this is part of a letter that he's written back to one of those churches, just to try and encourage them. And I just want to take some time out. I'm not going to go into masses of explanation about it. I just want to read it to you because it's this incredible explanation of who God is. It's this incredible explanation of how we can just truly understand that Jesus, that God is worthy of everything that we have, every breath, every penny, every moment, every song lyric, all of it. And I just wonder if we need to remind ourselves of that. I think sometimes we can remember that in the middle of a song on a Sunday morning. But worship isn't just about Sunday. It's about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday too. Worship is about from the moment you get out of bed in the morning to the moment that you go to sleep. It is about going to our jobs and doing those in a way that gives that moment to Jesus too. It is about the way that we handle our families. It is about the way that we speak to the people on the street. It is about the choices we make, about the things that we're going to buy, the people we're going to talk to. It is about all of those things. Worship is everything. But it's because God is everything. And when we understand that, and when we can remind ourselves of that day in, day out, that's when our lives become lives that are full of worship. So let me read this to you. Maybe close your eyes or do whatever it is that helps you to understand and focus. Read it as, you know, if that's helpful. Let's just remember who this God is, who really is worth it. We look at this Son Jesus and see the God who cannot be seen. We look at this Son and see God's original purpose in everything created. For everything, absolutely everything, above and below, visible and invisible, rank after rank after rank of angels, everything got started in him and finds its purpose in him. He was there before any of it came into existence, and he holds it all together right up to this moment. And when it comes to the church, he organizes and holds it together like a head does a body. He was supreme in the beginning, and leading the resurrection parade, he'll be supreme in the end. From beginning to end, he's there, towering far above everything, everyone. So spacious is he, so roomy, that everything of God finds its proper place in him without crowding. Not only that, but all the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, well, they get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies, all because of his death, his blood that poured down from the cross. You yourselves are a case study of what he does. At one time, you all had your backs turned to God, thinking rebellious thoughts of him, giving him trouble every chance you got. But now, by giving himself completely at the cross, actually dying for you, Christ brought you over to God's side and put your lives together whole and holy in his presence. You don't walk away from a gift like that. You stay grounded and steady in that bond of trust, constantly tuned into the message, careful not to be distracted or diverted. There is no other message, just this one. Every creature under heaven gets this same message, and I, Paul, am a messenger of this message. You might be sitting here thinking, well, I've just come along to church and I didn't really know what this was all about. I don't know who I want to worship. But it's worth getting to know this Jesus. It is worth getting to know this God, because he is worth it. He's worth giving up everything for. And it's worth finding out more. And we're going to spend the next few moments, I'm going to ask the band to come back up, doing something that Jesus asked his followers to do, to remember him. You see, I think all of us forget from time to time, and Jesus stops being the focus. He stops being the center. We forget for a moment all that he's done. And it's one of the reasons that I think he asked us to do what we call communion. It's because he knows what we're like. He knows that we're forgetful. He knows that we mean to do things, and then we forget, and it goes out of our head, and it, you know, other things crowd in and take over, you know, shopping lists and work pressures and family stuff. And so he asked his people to get together every now and again and remind themselves that actually 2,000 years ago, this awesome God who put everything together from beginning to end, who will be there at the end, who will lead the resurrection parade, who created rank after rank after rank of angels, that God chose to make us, chose to love us, chose to know us even though we turned our backs on him, chose to come up with a solution that would enable us to be with him, to know him, to be in relationship with him. And that solution looked like sending his own son to die on a cross. And that son came and lived for 30 odd years on earth. And he revealed who he was to some people. And he did some amazing things. But the most amazing thing of all was allowing mankind that he had created to nail his hands to a cross and his feet and put a crown of thorns on his head, to allow them to flog him and beat him and mock him, all so that we could know him, all so that we did not have to do that ourselves, all so that we could spend the rest of our lives in relationship with God. So he said, do this every now and again. Take some bread and take some wine. And we use grape juice and gluten-free bread, but it all counts. And do it and break that bread and remember that I broke my body for you. And drink that wine and remember that I let my blood shed for you. Do that. And every time you do it, remind yourself that I love you, that I died for you, that I am worth everything you've got because I gave you everything I had, everything I was. So we're going to do that together. I'm going to pray over the bread. I'm going to ask six people to come out and help me to pass that round. And the band are going to lead us in a song as we just share that bread around. So Father God, we come to you knowing that actually we can't even begin to get our heads around who you are. We can't even begin to fathom the wonder and the awe of your reality. We can't even begin to get it. And yet we know that you are real. We know that you are there. We know that you love us. We know that you loved us enough to die for us. And so we come to this table and we come to this bread and we take it. And as we take it, we remember. We remember all that you are, all that you did, all that you love us. And we're overwhelmed. And we stand in awe of who you are. Amen.